Of all the signs that should tell the world you're a Christian, the most important is love. Is there a secret to being a more loving person? Today here on Turning Point, Dr. David Jeremiah returns to the parable of the Good Samaritan to reveal what is and what isn't the key to demonstrating love in the world around you. Listen as David introduces the conclusion of Outstretched Arms, Living a Compassionate Life.
Well, there probably isn't a more familiar story in the Bible than the story of the Good Samaritan. And the story was given to demonstrate what a compassionate life is all about. And surely this story does that, as we've already learned in our preliminary discussion of the story today. We'll finish up that discussion as we look at what it means to live a life of outstretched arms. Once again, this series, The Signs of Life, is taking us through the five signs: dusty shoes, worn out knees, rolled up sleeves, open hands, and outstretched arms. These five signs demonstrate what the Christian life is all about when we understand what the great commandment teaches us, and that is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourself. The command is to all of us who are followers of Christ, and here are some practical ways to live out that command every day. We want to make available to you the book that is behind this series. It's a book called Signs of Life. It's 275 pages in length, and it's written in a very unique style. It's a 40-day reader. There are 40 short chapters in this book, one for you to read each day for 40 days, and it covers the whole spectrum of the five signs. You will find stories that illustrate each of these signs, added scripture, metaphors and paradigms that will really help you get your arms around what it means to live the signs of life every day. So when you send your gift today, be sure and ask for your copy of this book, Signs of Life. It will help you internalize the material that we're teaching right now. And let me once again make a plea to those of you who do small groups. This is one of the best small group curriculums that we have. For we have a full-length book for the leader and maybe for everyone who's in the group, because since it's put together as a 40-day reader, that makes a lot of sense for the group leaders to have it and for the people in the group to have it. And then there's a CD package that you may want to place some sections of in your group. There's a study guide for the leader to ask questions and to get discussion going. And, well, there's just so much here that I think would help you take this into the small group setting, and I hope you'll go to our website, which is davidjeremiah.org, and get all the details there about how you can order this entire package. Right now, let's get back to our study. We're talking about some very important things when we talk about compassion, and we're seeing it in action in the life of the Good Samaritan.
Now, the familiar Good Samaritan of our Lord's parable has become too familiar for us. The point of the story is, in fact, that he was not by any means familiar with what was going on. He was a foreigner from a faraway place with a different set of clothes and a strange accent. He was not like the other, not like the man who he was asked to save, not like the priest or the Levite who passed on the other side. He was a man who leapt over the walls between the familiar and the unfamiliar, and he acted like family even though he wasn't family, in order to bring help and healing to this man. You see, the trio of men in this story who should have assumed the care for this fallen traveler were the priest, the Levite, and the lawyer. But Jesus said something so counterintuitive that we are tempted to dismiss it without any thought at all. Jesus said that out of those who could have been neighbors to this man, the only one who really was a neighbor was a Samaritan. Now, that was the most untenable, intolerable thought this Jewish lawyer had ever had in his life. A Samaritan? The Samaritans hated the Jews, and the Jews hated the Samaritans. And Jesus chose this Samaritan in his story to strengthen the criticism of the priest and the Levite who had failed in their solemn obligation. The Good Samaritan, by what he did that day, made his nationality forever synonymous with love and gratitude and grace and mercy. You say, what in the world do you mean by that, Pastor? Well, the next time you go through a big city, if you drive around long enough, you will pass the Good Samaritan Hospital, or the Good Samaritan Clinic, or the Good Samaritan Church. The despised Samaritan, because he dealt out of compassion with outstretched arms, forever put himself in a place where his legacy is a legacy of kindness and gratitude and compassion. Now, as you look at what the Good Samaritan did that day, there are several aspects of his love that we ought to unpack and take home with us so we don't forget this story and we can apply it to our own lives. What did his love look like? What was involved in his compassion? First of all, the Bible teaches us that his love was displayed by compassion, verse 33. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. The Samaritan came and he saw and he had compassion. The priest and the Levite and the Samaritan all looked at the traveler, but only the Good Samaritan really saw him. You say, well, how could you look at somebody and not see them? We do it every day. I've done it. You've done it. You see them standing on the corner and you look at them, but you don't see them. You look past them. You look around them. You look over them. You try not to see them even though you've seen them, because they make you uncomfortable and they cause you to wonder, what should I do about this situation? They're standing at the intersections where your car has to stop. And I promise you, out of the corner of your eye, you see them, and then you get interested in something over here on this part of the landscape. You see them, but you don't see them. We are all prone to do that. It is a human condition. I do it. Don't feel guilty if you do it. We're all like that. But on that day, when the religious people who should have really seen this man only looked at him, the Samaritan, who really had no reason to know him or care about him, not only looked at him, but he saw him through the eyes of compassion. George Murray was talking about how you get compassion for the people in other countries. And he said, you can't get that by reading about them in a book. You can't get that by watching slides that a missionary brings back. You can't get it by seeing the movies. You can't get it by hearing touching stories that they give you. The only way you can have compassion on the people who need Christ, who don't have him, is to go and see them. And that's why he said, when you take short missions trips, and when you take your young people to the mission field, and when you cause them to walk in the midst of it all, and you see it, you really see it with the eyes of compassion. One of the reasons why we don't have compassion is we will not allow ourselves to see. But if we're to be like Jesus, we have to open our eyes. We have to look. We have to ask him to enable us to handle the pain and the anguish and the blood that often comes through our eyes into our hearts. Then secondly, we are told that his love was demonstrated by contact. Notice, so he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The Good Samaritan did more than observe the fallen traveler. He did more than the priest and the Levite had done. He was not about to discuss this as the lawyer had done. He went to where he was, and he began to minister to his needs. In doing this, the Samaritan was risking a great deal. In our culture today, if you were asked in Swaziland to bandage up somebody who had AIDS, you would be terrified, because it's a disease that's transferred by contact with the blood, and you would be terrified. Jesus says that the Good Samaritan went to where he was. Now watch this. Put yourself in his place. You see this guy all trashed, laying there on the ground. You walk up and you say to yourself, I'd like to help this guy, but whoever did this to him is probably still hanging around. When I get to Jericho, I'll call 911. The Samaritan risked everything, and he illustrates for us that genuine love always involves risk. Unlike the priest, the Samaritan touched the traveler with hands of kindness and compassion. No ceremonial reason would be great enough to restrain him. He bandaged his wounds, he bathed his sores, and he helped him on his way. He contacted him, he touched him. Have you ever thought about how many times in the Bible we are told about Jesus touching people? He touched them. Compassion cries out to be touched. Thirdly, his love was delivered with care. If you go all the way to the end of the story, verse 37, after the story's over, Jesus asked the attorney, which of these was the neighbor? And his answer is very interesting. He said, he who showed mercy on him. What did this Samaritan do? The Samaritan showed mercy on this traveler. He cleansed his wounds. He used wine to do that. And the alcohol content of the wine was often used to cauterize wounds and to cleanse them. I was thinking about that this week. It's sort of like something my mother used to do to me when I skinned my knee running around as a little boy. She had something in our house called methylate. Anybody here ever remember methylate? It was worse than the injury. I dreaded that bottle of methylate. If you had a hurt and you started to cry, they would say, well, we'll just put some methylate on. Oh, I'm better. I'm okay. I'm all right. Methylate stung. And that's what the use of the wine was for, to cleanse the wound and cauterize it. Then the Samaritan poured oil on his wounds, bound up his wounds in bandages so that they could begin to heal. And he delivered his love to this man with mercy and care. You can just see him doing it. He's a loving, caring person. And then finally, his love was not only displayed by compassion, demonstrated by contact, delivered with care, it was documented by cost. Notice verse 35. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii. By the way, denarii is 1 day's wages at that time. So he gave him 2 days' wages. He gave them to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you have to spend doing that, when I come back again, I will repay you. Now, let me tell you something, friends. You can't love somebody without it costing you something. The Samaritan gave his eyes to the traveler when he looked on him with concern. He gave his heart to the traveler when he had compassion on him. He gave his beast to the traveler when he let him ride. He gave his feet to the traveler when he walked alongside. He gave his hands to the traveler when he bound up his wounds. He gave his time to the traveler when he postponed his own schedule so that he could stay. He gave his money to the traveler when he paid for his stay at the inn. Jesus is teaching us here that when we love somebody, we give ourselves to them. We sacrifice time and money and possessions and priorities. Husbands and wives learn this lesson early. It doesn't cost much to get married. Boy, it sure is expensive to be married. How many of you know what I'm talking about? I mean, all the time you're giving, the wife giving to the husband to the wife. It's an expensive, caring relationship. The same is true with parents and children. Jesus is teaching us that neighbors learn that lesson. When you decide that